Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about data, data science, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. My name is Vidya, and co-hosting with me is Chris Albin.
Yo.
Hi, Chris. It's been a little while since we chatted. What have you been up to this last week?
You know, actually, the thing that I've been thinking about a lot is that people will come onto Twitter or via, like, email, and they'll say, hey, you know, like, it must be really interesting to do this podcast and that kind of stuff, but I will give you guys the absolute truth right now. The whole reason that this podcast happens is because I really like to talk to Jonathan and Vid.
Right. And, like, yeah.
And what you don't see is that before every recording is, like, an hour of just gabbing about our lives.
Right.
That happens. And then we sort of push the record button. So you have this, like this is my catch up with my friends.
Yeah.
That happens in the week. And then, like, we go off and we record a podcast that would basically be exactly like what we talk about on the show and how we talk about it is exactly the kind of conversation that would happen if we were together in person at a bar or a restaurant.
I know.
Like, this is just it. This is the conversation.
It totally feeds me, man. Like, I feel like I need it. And honestly, I don't think I would have been this committed since, I don't know how long we've been doing this, like, from back in Nairobi idea to all the way now. I don't think I'd be so consistently committed if it wasn't about that mainly. Now, just as, like, fun and good to catch up with everybody and hang out and make jokes that are so inappropriate that we should definitely not be recording them. I mean, I love that. And I always say that there's some things, like, the pre-conversation is, like, I don't know. There ought to be some venue for that. I think people would really get a kick out of it. But it's definitely not, you know, clean.
Yeah, I will admit, I like sometimes when there's been some really amazing comment in the pre-conversation, I've tagged it right at the end of the episode.
Oh, so right.
when I'm editing it, like, it goes through and there's, like, the outro music, and then the outro music dies away, and there's some, like, preposterous statement that said right at the end there. Because there's just, so I don't know, like, you and Jonathan, like, we founded a company together. We worked at a company before. We've done a ton of different projects together. I can hang out with you guys and have hung out with you guys forever. Forever, right. Forever, 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 forever.
Right.
So.
I know. You know, the other thing is, like, I just miss us a lot. Like, it's really one thing to be on the show and then get to talk to each other and get to screw around. And then it's another thing to, you know, be in person. And we're rare, like, from the beginning of the moment we met, it was not in person.
Yeah.
So it's, like, a very rare thing for us to get together in person. And so I miss that. And this is kind of a great replacement for that. And it's every week. So it's kind of, it's great.
Yeah. Sometime we'll have to figure out how to do, like, an in-person recording, I think.
I think it has to be video.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's so stupid about this is, like, this goes into the nature of recording, but it's actually better that we're all in different places.
Right.
Because each one of our audio tracks is different, and then I can cobble them together, which is kind of weird. But I think a video thing would be, I mean, we did a live show. Me and Jonathan did a live show.
Right. That's true.
We can do more live shows.
With an audience. That would be really fun. Although I worry about taping it. Like, maybe we should just have an untaped audience one and there's no recording allowed, and then we can actually, you know, do our pre-conversation, and
this will be like leaks.
There will be leaks. It'll be horrible. People will be live tweeting it.
All right,
it's you this time. I want to hear what your story is.
Okay, so my story this week comes from abc.net, which is an Australian news organization, and I actually chose it not because there's any particular insight from this article, but rather because I've seen these articles, dozens of these articles, over the last year. Mm-hmm. And while I have, you know, we've sort of touched upon them like a little bit, we've never hit it head on, which is, if AI can make art, what is the future of art and artists?
Ooh. And okay. I can't even stop. I know you have more things to say.
No.
But first of all, it's that you said, if AI can make art, and I want to step you right there, my friend, and say, can it though? Is it art if it doesn't have any clue what it's doing and all it knows is pixels? It doesn't even know pixels. It just knows math.
It's true. I mean, so we should be clear before going forward that Vidya and I are going to come at this from a very different perspective. And not to speak for Vidya or to make assumptions, but I have spent a lot of time with Vidya, and I am definitely not an artist. Like, I have no interest in art. Like, if I had an office, like, if someone gave me an office, I would decorate it with a power charger. Like, that would be an extent.
What was happening? First of all, art, it doesn't have to be decoration. I mean, geez.
Wait, it doesn't have to be decoration?
No, not at all. It could be a statement, or it could be something that makes you think about the world differently, or it could remind you of an emotion, or be like the most pure essence of a feeling that you can't really describe in words.
Yeah, that's the power charger.
Yes, I love it. You could be like some avant-garde artist, you know, if you really...
My life is, this is my ball and chain, literally, like a little white ball and chain from Apple.
I love it. I mean, I think if you came over to my house, which weirdly you haven't ever, but if you ever came over to my house, you would probably like fall over laughing, because most of the art in my house is like big black squares with like a corner of the frame cut off. Seriously, like that's actually a painting we have in our bedroom. And so you might actually feel like it's not so different from the power charger scenario.
All right. Okay. So clearly Vin is going to come at this from a different perspective. Okay. So in the last year, the use of AI to, I don't feel like I can say make art, like replicate art, produce art, output art. That's the
I would say, thing. How about have use of AI, you know, as a tool? For
okay.
Artists.
Well, we'll see. So,
okay. All right,
so literally, there are apps now, and the app that I want to talk about is Prisma, which
You
take a photo and then you convert it into the painting style of some artist. So, say I took a photo of my breakfast burrito, and I can, with a push of a button, convert it into a, you know, Van Gogh painting of my breakfast burrito.
Okay, so this Prisma app, honestly. And I'm not, you know, being like the millennial kind of hyperbole thing. Like, actually, literally, I spent about a week and a half, like, in depths of despair and existential wondering when I got Prisma. Because I was like, what does this mean? How is this? What is this? What? Because now I'm not even painting, but I want to believe that I'm the one that did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was like, God, it was such a disgusting feeling. I don't know. I couldn't. I used it a little bit and played with it. And then I was like, I just hope this doesn't get popular.
Well, too late for that. But actually, your point leads into exactly my thinking around this, which is like my big question about all this is around credit. Like, who gets credit for it? Because from an outsider perspective, like, I'm not in the art world, I don't care about art, like, it seems really important about who gets credit. For example, if I painted just right now a modern art piece of three colored strokes of paint on a big white canvas, like, no one would care or find that interesting. But if some famous abstract artist went out and made the same painting, it would sell for millions of dollars. And I'm not trying to diss art. I understand it's the fact that, like, they make strokes of paint, but it's really that after 50 years of painting, they know which three strokes to make and whether to cut off the corner of the painting, apparently, for some reason. Right. However, this is exactly my point, because with deep learning and AI, we can learn or replicate or simulate which three strokes to make on that canvas, right? I can literally steal your knowledge or a replication of your knowledge of which three strokes to make and then apply that to everyone's breakfast burrito with a touch of the button.
Right, but as soon as you do it after I do it, then yours is derivative.
Right, no, I agree. Although, isn't all art
derivative? Or is it just like partially derivative?
Oh,
man, I've been waiting like for the entire time to actually
finally. I don't think we've ever even said the partially derivative anywhere but the like very start of the podcast.
Oh, it just feels so complete.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe all art is derivative, but still there's a reason why you might have been inspired to stick your AI algorithm onto those three strokes. And so that whatever motivation that was is kind of, it sort of settles the debate, I think, in that it's really still because of this other one. that happened. And that other one was the first one. And then that's it. That's the one. So if it did the first one, the first three strokes, and no one ever did that before, then...
Do they get more credit for it? I guess because you're like the father or the mother of some style of art.
Right. Yeah, that's a big part of it.
So let me set up a hypothetical example.
Okay.
Say I take a photo of my breakfast burrito. Okay.
Which you don't actually do. That would be something I would do. But yes.
So, you know, but like, let's make it a little bit more interesting. Say it's like a really telling photo. Like, for example, my breakfast burrito photo is actually like a touching narrative of the struggles of a young teen from a rural area trying to make it in the big city. You know, like some kind of very, very.
Okay. I want to say that sounds ridiculous, but you're totally an artist, my friend, because they want to poke at things like that. I want to convince you by the end of this that you have it in you.
You know, I could literally imagine some like stark high contrast photo of like a teen with a 1,000-mile stare, like munching his breakfast burrito before he gets on a Greyhound bus or something.
Chills. I love it.
Okay. So this is my photo. I have taken this whatever photo of this teen getting on a bus while eating a breakfast burrito. And I use Prisma to turn it into a stylized painting of the burrito. And say it gets really famous, right? And people want this stylized photo because, you know, whatever. Someone wants to put it on the cover of Time Magazine. Mm-hmm. Is this my photo of a breakfast burrito, or is this Prisma's stylized painting of my breakfast burrito?
Hmm.
And also, is it Prisma's stylized painting of my breakfast burrito? Or say if I used a Picasso photo and it totally changed it into like a completely different style, is it Picasso's painting of a breakfast burrito?
Hmm.
Like, I genuinely don't know, because the beginning photo, which is like my low res colored, you know, washed out piece of crap photo of a you know, kid eating a breakfast burrito, and the end result, which is like four lines, which like capture the essence of it, you know, like one stroke, right. Say that is a very Picasso-esque breakfast burrito. You know, like, maybe the filter did more than I do to convey the point in a strong way, maybe?
I think the doing part is much less meaningful than the intention part of it.
Oh.
And I think that's really also the difference between, like, a kid scribbling on a piece of paper and then that artist that's been scribbling on the piece of paper, is that they're doing it for a totally different reason. Now, let's say you actually just took a photo of this. Oh, you took your photo and it wasn't through Prisma. You just took your photo outside of Prisma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you printed it on your laptop onto, you know, through your printer at home. And the printer ran out of like color ink, so it just printed black and white. So now you have this black and white paper version of your breakfast burrito photo.
Mm-hmm.
Does the printer get the credit? Because it's totally different.
That is a good point. I mean, because like, okay, so the article actually mentions this artist called John McCormick, who has a series, which must be in a gallery showing or something. I don't really know what a series is, but okay, has this art series.
Uh-huh. It just means like a bunch of different paintings in one, you know, collection.
Okay.
Theme.
Right, one theme. Okay. So he is a series of algorithmically grown plants. And then he has another series that he's working on, which is a group of artificial creatures that will respond to visitors in the gallery space.
Hmm.
And the reason that I find this interesting is because what McCormick is doing is using AI as a tool rather than as an output. So imagine my breakfast burrito, which is a touching narrative of the struggles of being a young teen in a rural area trying to make it in the big city. And it was taken by me in some way, like some angle or some light setting, to exploit the Picasso Prisma filter,
mm-hmm.
to make a better photo. So I am using it as like a paintbrush or a tool to do it. So that is where I think we totally agree, which is also makes sense because every single time I've seen a modern artist's photo, not modern art, but like a living artist photo, they always have this like little little square next to the photo that has this massive blocks of really pretentious text that tries to explain right. why they have like a photo of a baby in a bucket or something right. like that.
Dude, you're good. You're good. Don't you know who you are?
Uh-huh. So they always have this like thing and it's way too long. But like, I guess that is the modern attempt to guarantee that there's intention behind this, right? So mm-hmm. so it isn't a big giant black canvas that I broke the corner and then I cut it off and whatever. It's actually it's actually about the struggles of man in the world. Okay, I get it. So
I think that using it as a tool is 100%. And it is exactly like a paintbrush. It's like a smarter paintbrush. I mean, not even remember. Nowadays, people use Photoshop on their photographs all day long, all the time. Like professional, yeah, good really good, like fine art photographers use that. And then, again, it's just another tool. So, like, what's the difference between a paintbrush and, you know, an algorithmically, you know, developed tool that learns from things? The other part of it is that there's a completely different experience that a human being goes through when they stare at a blank medium, whether it's like a block of clay or a piece of paper or a canvas or whatever it is, or even a computer, like a blank, you know, like piece of code that doesn't do anything yet. Mm-hmm. Like that moment, at least for me, like personally, is totally the moment of being an artist where you have to decide what you're going to do and what you're gonna say. Wow. And is anything that you're gonna do gonna say anything, and what is and will people even get it? Like that process is almost heartbreakingly like overwhelming in many cases, because if you want to be an artist that's not just to like, you know, that wants to say something, if you want to you know, like draw and color and do your coloring books while you're like drinking wine in the evening like me and so many of my friends do, it doesn't fall into the same category as this type of like making art artist perspective. And the AI scenario, like those bots never go through that process. They know exactly what they're gonna do because they've been told.
Can we go back to the fact that you have adult coloring books, or do you have kids coloring books? Like, are you coloring like a Thomas the Tank Engine?
No, I mean, those are boring. I like the adult ones. I do. Yeah. And I mean, they have some really hardcore, crazy, weird ones for adults now. Right. like definitely not for kids. Wow. That is not a kid's coloring book. I know. People are crazy. See? But you want to put babies in buckets, so. Yeah.
Okay. So go back to your point. How? What if I challenge you with this scenario? So you say it's about, you know, blank canvas, and then you imbue it with your intention to create something, which mm-hmm. sounds incredible. And one, there's a book called Hackers and Painters, which is really famous, which I have actually not read, but I hear it's basically along those lines. So how about this? What if I create a neural network that has random paintings, just as its data, random paintings, and I say, take these random paintings and put them together in some random way and shape it in a random way and redo it in totally a random way that nothing to do with me, just everything is random. There's not right. like a single constant in the whole piece of code that I've written.
So it's not like learning on any particular criteria or anything.
And there's no intention, or I'm trying to set up a scenario off the cuff that has no intention behind it. It is
right.
It is like our, you know, randomly buying drugs
right.
that we talked about last time, right? There's no, like, you can't, it isn't a crime because it wasn't intending to do that. Like, there's no crime, or there's no art, whatever. There's no like intention behind my thing, but it produces like, a thing. There is a image that is spit out at the end of it. Is that art, or am I just like a random?
I think you just explained it. I think that without the intention, you know, I have my nephew who's like 4, and he'll just randomly scribble things like, you know, chalk, you know, sidewalk chalk on sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And then other times he's like telling me that this is an airplane.
Yeah.
And though there's a difference between randomly scribbling things and then saying that this is an airplane, even though it looks nothing like an airplane. But but there's an intention there. Right? Like he's looking at it from his brain and with whatever skills he's got, and he's looking up at the sky and he's obsessed with planes. And so this is a thing that he cares about. Now, some people would also argue that there is a whole part of the story that led up to that painting that actually, or piece of art that actually is important. Like this John McCormack's perspective of even using technology to do it and why and how he thinks about technology is really interesting. Like there's an article about it and it's making us talk about it. And that backstory oftentimes adds a big dimension to the painting. Whereas like my little nephew painting or scribbling an airplane maybe doesn't have as interesting of a backstory.
So in your mind, as an art expert in front of thousands of people...
Not, but yeah.
So what do you think is the future of art and artistry in a world where, you know, art sort of becomes all about intention, which maybe it always is, but like,
right.
Like it will, is art going to do totally fine? Because of course it's about the intention and that's what people will pay for or go to school for or whatever. Or is it
something
else?
I think that there's a big split between the economics of art and what people might consider art for, not really for art's sake, but art that doesn't necessarily fall into the economic limelight, really. So there's people that can get all sorts of great accolades and, you know, do all sorts of things that are publicly lauded, and other people that are doing all sorts of great things but are just never discovered or not relevant for that time, or maybe ahead of their time, or not relevant for the majority of the people but really powerful for a few people. So there's this whole big giant range of what is art that shouldn't just be gauged by whether it'll be economically impactful, like viable or worth something monetarily. Mm-hmm. So I think that opens things up, because then like people who are using these technologies maybe to try and make money off of it or maybe to fall into a particular path it should be really clear that they're in that bucket, and that, you know, like so many artists around the world don't have access to this stuff or the knowledge or the experience to use technology to make it. So I don't think art is in its purest form is in any trouble at all, because people will have done it for the beginning of time. But I wonder if the art industry will maybe because then it'll be difficult if we don't specify if there was technology that was fueling it or not. I think that's really where we get into trouble. I don't think it's about credit. I think it's more that it could be used to boost up a person's reputation if people think that they're naturally coming up with the stuff, but in fact they're using a computer to help.
Right. So it's about sort of the having a human. So, okay. Imagine that I come up with a really amazing style of art that no one has come up with before, and I use it and people love it and I get famous for it and that kind of stuff. If someone then instantly applies a Prisma filter based on my stuff, that it will be worth less than my stuff.
Right.
Because my stuff has the originality and intention and backstory and narrative behind it, while the, you know, Albon-esque breakfast burrito someone else is taking a photo of stealing my idea that makes a lot of sense to me. I can see that if art is very important to people and people put it inside their private spaces like their houses and such,
yeah,
that possibly a bunch of algorithmic stuff for which you ran the script, I mean it wouldn't be a script, but like you ran the neural network once and then produced something and you could have just kept it running all night and made 4 billion things, is probably worth less in people's psyche, like mind, than the actual piece that they can stare at and be really moved by.
It should be. I mean, how many Van Gogh Starry Nights have you seen, like on people's mugs and people's like jackets and like, you know, so, and they're not going to be worth obviously the same as the original, and that's appropriate. Like the original has had such a profound impact on people that it's making them want to recreate it, that means that the original is worth something.
Yeah.
No, so I think that in itself is awesome. You know, and then I have to admit, with going back to Prisma, so I was like, I got to find a way to like maybe kind of one up on this Prisma thing. So I painted a painting with paint and water and acrylics and on a canvas, right? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an abstract painting. And then I took a photo of it and put it through Prisma, right? Mm-hmm. And then I started like saving it and re-putting it through Prisma.
Oh, wow.
Like, so it was originally not a photograph.
Yeah.
Which I always feel that if you take a photograph and then turn it into like a Van Gogh painting, then it's just like, okay, you're just turning it into a Van Gogh painting. There's like nothing. There's no real thought process there. Yeah. Really. However, if you actually started that original photograph, maybe it's, you know, you thought about that photograph or you painted a painting out of it and then you turned it digital, I feel like it was kind of going backwards in some weird way, like starting with the painting. I don't know how that even makes sense, but it felt like there was some I was making some progress towards that, just to kind of see, well, if the filter kind of abstracts it in a particular way, but it's kind of unexpected and unpredictable, then maybe I could use that unpredictable thing to do something useful out of it. I mean, it didn't really go anywhere, because then I was like, okay, well, here I have this like thing now. I don't know what it means. I need Chris Alvin to tell me what this means.
You know, I'll admit that so I make these machine learning flashcards that I scan.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real card that I use pens on, and I make the card.
There's some drawings on there.
Yeah, there's charts and stuff. And so I've been putting them on Twitter. And then a friend of mine actually recommended that instead of just having the straight card, I take the card and I scan it, which is what I normally do, and it just looks like a scanned piece of paper. And I run it through this Adobe Illustrator feature called Image Trace that turns the scan into like a vectorized image, which you don't really need to know anything except for the fact that like it turns it into like the background becomes totally white and every single line becomes a shape. Like it sort of stylizes it. But what was really interesting to me is that the style, I really liked the style, and I liked the idea that I could resize the image to any size I want, but that doesn't really matter. It became a different piece of art. See, I'm using the word art here. Because when I used the style, like the style that I was doing with my pen, when it came converted, sort of was simplified a little bit, and it looked a little bit cooler in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And two, then I started making the, you know, new cards, assuming that I was going to apply that Adobe Illustrator feature. So I would write things in different ways, because if you wrote the letters too close together, it would kind of mush them up a little bit. So I started to space everything differently and that kind of stuff. And I would adjust to using this feature. So I will admit, I have been doing exactly what I guess you and McCormick have been doing of seeing technology. I don't think this is AI. I think it's just like something else. But there's, you know, using this computer feature, applying it to things that I make by hand in order to produce something that I thought was interesting.
Right. And at the end, there's this judgment that you are, like, you're delivering some evaluative criteria. You're, like, actually deciding whether it's cool or not at the end. And I don't know that, I mean, I guess you could train something to judge it also.
Maybe. I mean, I like the idea. I like the idea of intention becomes important. I mean, maybe more important, like sort of maybe everything, right? Instead of nothing, or not nothing, but like intention plus. Like if it was like whatever, you were in the photorealism phase of art, maybe it was obviously intention, but like a lot of it was the fact that you could paint photorealistic paintings, which there was no photos or something back then probably. So, you know, like I can understand that in the case of a computer or an AI or whatever could make anything, that the thing, the intention behind the thing that was made becomes very important, which is kind of a really touching way to end this episode.
Yeah, and I feel like you've come into your own, Chris Alvin.
See, I have a series coming out. It's called
You have a series already, those flashcards.
True. My series of flashcards, there'll be a gallery showing, just you can learn a lot about
that. Would be awesome.
Drop out and, you know, rectify linear units.
I love it. You know, there are so many other places that AI is integrating itself into art. You know, I've just been reading about music, where musicians are using AI to compose with them. Like, they'll play a couple things that seem interesting to them, and then the machine will play something back that it thinks could be maybe interesting to maybe go after it or before it. Or repeated, and then they're having a really good time. Like, it seems like all of these musicians are having a blast trying to compose and come up with new things with the help of these tools that are definitely algorithmically developed. And then there's another one I found where it was creating new sounds, like that were blends of two instruments. Like, it was like the bass and the flute, and it would create a new sound altogether that was like a flute bass baby.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So you could imagine a situation where if you were going to do a creative endeavor, one of the first steps or one strategy you could take would be to do a little bit of work and then create a AI buddy to mm-hmm. sort of be your partner in for the next thing. Yeah. So you could imagine a situation of, I don't know, say I'm writing a book, like a fiction book or something, and I have the AI participating, sort of giving me ideas. You know what's actually really interesting about that, though, now that I think about this? So this is a broader point, but I'm a big fan of coming up with constraints in order to make better outcomes. So, for example, if someone asks you a technical interview question of like, when is the last time or when what was your best experience that you had, you know, building something, whatever. It's really hard to think about that, or at least for me to think about that over everything I've ever done. But it's really easy for me to think about that if I constrain it to a certain company or a certain time period. And I think about that constraint beforehand, and then whatever comes up, I can answer it within that constraint. And there's actually, I think there's these note cards called oblique strategies, which is the idea of trying to get you to think original thoughts by making some constraint in there. So they'll say things like, think about the brick, not the wall. So if you're really struggling with something and you like randomly pull out a card, it says think about the brick rather than the wall. And you try to think about your problem in terms of those. And you pull out another one and it's like the line is actually dotted. And then you think about that.
Oh my gosh. I love this. I feel like it could be so useful for my artwork.
They're pretty cool. I mean, I haven't used them like totally extensively, but I like the idea of adding constraints. And if you did have an AI buddy who is helping you in the process, say outlining a chapter before you wrote it, and so it is sort of making a crude storyline because it doesn't really know what it's doing, and then your job is to make that really interesting and cool, and you can deviate from it in certain ways.
Right.
You're both working together, but the constraints by the crude AI is increasing your creative process.
Dude, this nails it on the head, because this goes back to that blank page scenario, because it basically is not giving you a blank page to start with.
Yeah, that's so really, really interesting.
So then it actually maybe makes it a little easier to start, knowing that whatever you start with from a blank page is something you might change and transform anyway. But at least you don't have that overwhelming, like, anything's possible, what am I going to say moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is our show for the week. If you liked what you heard, please let us know. Subscribe wherever you listen to our podcasts and tell your friends. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at @PartiallyD. You can follow me, Vid, at @Vid_Spandana. You can follow Chris at @ChrisAlbin. And you can follow Jonathan at @JonathanMorgan. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye, all.
All right. I like it. AI as a tool.
Yeah. Poop.
Oh, it's my turn. Sorry. Oh, right. Okay, give me a second. Sorry.
I'm going to need to remember to cut that part out.
Or leave it in. It's so funny.
There's like comment. I look at the time. I'm like, all right, we made a good episode.
I didn't even look at the comment.
It's just like nothing.
Sorry. I forgot it was me.
Poop.
Can you please just leave it in? It's so funny.
Why do people let me near mics?